When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a vault in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that genuinely just wants to know what size shoes you wear, it's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop, available in your podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you get it early as a patron.
Because patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he just hit up Arby's for a glorious meat fiesta. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Nobody's had Arby's since 95. Ahoy!
And she finally made it here after dodging all the slow motion doves flying around her. It's Alice Ginevra McKelly.
G'day, g'day, g'day. My shoe size is 8.5 if anybody would like me to send us home.
Good to know, good to know. Mm-hmm. And each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. Welcome, lady and gentleman, to this episode of Sif Pop. We've got some fun things in store. We're going to review a couple movies. Well, Andrew and I are going to review a couple movies. Alice is just going to be with us for the Borderlands review that we're going to do for the Big Dig today. Our final artifact will be The Killer, which is out on Peacock. John Woo remaking his 1989 movie The Killer, and Alice didn't get a chance to see that. Apparently it's not out
Look,
you don't have Peacock.
We don't get that bird streaming service here, so I would have had to find alternative resources, and unfortunately by the time it would have been available for me to source alternatively, I had to go to bed. So,
Say less.
Yeah.
There's no reason to incriminate yourself here on Sif Pop.
I'm talking about VOD, of course.
Oh, of course. Yes, yes. Wait, there's no VOD when it's on Peacock. So we're going to do that. We're also going to talk best ever video game adaptations for the best ever challenge. That can be movie or television. But we're going to kick it off with some buried treasure. Andrew, let's start with you. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about?
Well, I am making good on my promise from last week. I am going to review Lady in the Water from M. Night Shyamalan.
Very nice. Now, for those who weren't around last week, we did an M. Night Sif Sort, ranked all the M. Night movies, and Lady in the Water was just one of a couple of the main M. Night movies that you hadn't seen.
Yep.
So I'm really curious to hear what you thought of this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I am too, because I was in primary school when the movie came out.
Oh, no.
And it was probably not.
I was in college. Does that make you feel better, Aaron?
I had four children. I mean, you know, what are you guys trying to do to me? You know,
like, hey, I was double digits. I was double digits, you know.
Fair enough.
I just wasn't mature enough, according to parents. Uh-huh. You know, those
I get it.
Pesky, you know, the same pesky parents that let me watch Buffy and Charmed and all of that. They were like, Lady in the Water, no go for you. So
too much.
That's actually the case with so many movies where people are like, you haven't seen that, and it's like I either wasn't alive yet or I was too young to want to watch it. And so like that even includes like There Will Be Blood, which I will get to eventually, but I was like 13 when that came out and I was not interested. Now I'm old and I have, you know, I mean older, I'm not old, I'm older. Anyway, tell us about Lady in the Water.
Yes, Andrew, what did you discover about this movie?
Well, Aaron, I may have heard you say some of this once in a review for Lady in the Water. If so, it's brilliant, and I'm stealing it right now. Otherwise, this is a totally original and humble review. I believe that this is M. Night Shyamalan saying, please believe in magic again. And through the art form of film, allow me to help you rediscover the magic of imagination and storytelling. In a world that often prioritizes realism and grit, Lady in the Water feels like a plea for us to return to a time where we believed in the extraordinary, where we let our minds wander into the realms of myth and fantasy. Now, that all sounds well and good on the surface, but I can also understand 100% why this would be somebody's least favorite film. And I have to let you know, this movie is panned by critics globally. I think it has a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it won a Razzie for the worst movie of the year. There are parts of this film that I believe are insultingly bad. I do want to say that right up front. I think that I can pinpoint one aspect of his storytelling technique that people often dislike, and he's not afraid to simply dump exposition through narration. The scenes with the Korean mother and daughter who go along with everything Cleveland asks them are some of the cheesiest and laziest pages of dialogue I've ever heard. It reminds me of scenes in Old where Shyamalan does the same thing. He doesn't shy away from having his characters guess as to what's happening, only for them to be right every single time. It can come across as contrived and frustratingly convenient. I do have positives. There are huge pros around for this film. I think Paul Giamatti is freaking brilliant in this movie. He is astounding, bringing a level of believability and realism to a film that is anything but believable and realistic. His performance is like an anchor for the audience, grounding us in a world that is otherwise fantastical. And you know what? I think that's where Shyamalan thrives. He isn't interested in telling stories that are grounded in reality, nor should he be. I think we need somebody in Hollywood who isn't afraid to say to hell with cookie-cutter, sugar rush, adrenaline high blockbusters. I believe in originality. Unfortunately, though, Shyamalan struggled here to marry his love of the fantastical world that is grounded in the everyday reality. As for where I stand on Lady in the Water, I'm not really sure, to be honest, because I just saw the movie yesterday, and I'm still haven't landed on where I feel on it. Well, I think it has glaring flaws. I think that, and this is probably be my biggest takeaway from the film, perhaps the true magic is not in its storytelling, but in how it makes me reconsider the stories that came before it. Because after watching this movie, I've started to rethink all the other Shyamalan movies that I've seen before, and I'm seeing them in a different light now. And it's all because of Lady in the Water. So it's going to have a lasting effect on me. Whether you like this movie or dislike it, I think there's going to be a lasting effect on the watcher.
That's great. That's great. I've often said that Lady in the Water is the movie that unlocks Shyamalan. Like for me, when I watched that movie, it unlocked something about the way he tells stories that just made everything else make sense. Like you said, you look back on even the movies before that and you go, oh, there's a storytelling vibe here. And I think people, the reason that Shyamalan has kind of gone through, people kind of leaving him a little bit, you know, going from, you know, he's a genius to not liking his stuff. Has a little bit to do with Last Airbender. Let's just say that. But I think right around Lady in the Water, The Happening, After Earth, that streak of movies, the story and the subject matter didn't hit as well. And so the style of that kind of storytelling then felt like weirdly cringe, right? Like it became this different kind of thing when it's the same kind of acting and delivery of dialogue that you see in the earlier movies. It's just that the stories were a little more compelling. It's interesting to have watched him fully embrace that side of himself, that storytelling side of himself.
Well, I'm interested for sure because I like fantasy and I don't want any reality in my fantasy. And, you know, I mean, like, I know that it's set in the real world, but, like, I don't want the storytelling to be realistic. I watch this stuff to escape. I don't want, especially because modern fantasy is so grounded in reality. And so I'm just like, I just want to see how wacky and fantastical it can get. And that's what I'm hoping.
Actually, I just had this thought, and I know we're really wanting to move on from this, so apologies. But what do you think about thinking of this movie as a children's film?
That's, I mean, that he has explicitly said it's a children's story.
Has he?
Yeah, that Lady in the Water is a parent reading their child a story at bedtime.
Isn't it creepy?
Yeah. I don't know if you know this, Alice. Children's stories have been creepy for a long time.
Brothers Grimm.
Like, it is a staple of children's storytelling to tell creepy stories.
All I know about this film is that Bryce Dallas Howard is found in a pool and it's creepy.
There you go. Well, maybe that's all you need to know.
Yeah. Actually, I found the film rather inspiring, actually.
Yeah, I think you might like it.
Well, should give it to Walt.
I've talked about it enough. Sorry, guys.
What is your buried treasure, Alice?
Mine. Let's just go on a completely different vein. So I recently watched the first season of a new show called Dinosaur, which is not about dinosaurs, but it is in fact about a paleontologist from Scotland, and she is autistic. So it's kind of like if you got Derry Girls and Atypical and kind of like mished it together. And essentially the story goes that she's a paleontologist. She lives with her sister. She's, you know, enjoying life. And then her sister comes back from a weekend away and announces that she's engaged and getting married to her relatively recent boyfriend. Like, they've only been dating for 6 weeks. And so the whole it's a British comedy, so, you know, it's only 6 episodes, and it's just about like the inconveniences and the very light and extremely manageable chaos that abounds as a result of, you know, the families and the getting married and her life being kind of turned upside down by her sister getting married to this guy that she doesn't, that she's irritated by. And I love it because it's like the story is about an autistic woman, which also you don't really see a lot of movies or TV shows about autistic women who often present very differently to what you expect autistic people to present, hence why a lot of women go undiagnosed for a really, really long time. And so I think it's a really interesting look into it, but also it's really funny and really wholesome and really sweet. And like I said, sometimes you watch comedies, and especially like if it's cringe comedy or something, it's a bit outlandish and silly and over the top, and this one's like, I could see all of this happening, and it's just manageable enough chaos that I can just like sit back and enjoy it without having to be like, oh no, you know, like it's not anxiety inducing. And everyone in it, it's funny because it's like, yes, she's the one in the center with autism, but it's not really about how she's incapable of dealing with life or anything. It's just more about how everyone has their own issues. And she just kind of wants to have her job and live with her sister and go on a date with the coffee van man. And then all these irritations keep getting in the way. So can strongly recommend, the full season's out. It's like 6 episodes, 20 minutes each. You can smash it out in like a night.
Very nice. Dinosaurs on Hulu here in the States. Not sure where it is elsewhere, but that's where it is here. My buried treasure is the new season of The Challenge. Now, I've talked about The Challenge on the show before. It's a reality show, which has a kind of a concept that's a little bit different than most of the OG reality shows like Survivor and Big Brother and those. They eventually brought returning players back for those shows, but the challenge from the beginning has kind of been the same group of people. Like, you know, new people will come in, sometimes they'll stay. But so you kind of get to know these people over the years. Well, season 40 of The Challenge is going on right now. You heard me. Season 40 of The Challenge is going on right now, and it is called The Challenge 40 Battle of the Eras, and they have brought back every famous challenger that you, if you've watched the show, that you can think of from like all the different eras of the challenge. They break it up into four different eras, the first being from 1998 to 2005. So people that joined in that era, and then it just kind of goes from there, like 2005 to 2010 is kind of that next era. That's kind of the era where I think the biggest stars are, like Johnny Bananas is in that era. Cara Maria is in that era. Laurel Stuckey's in that era. So a lot of the greats of the greats. Era three is 2011 to 2017. Lots of interesting people coming in from that era. You know, you've got like Corey and Devin and Jonna and Jordan. I know all these names mean everything to everybody.
No. Weren't a couple of these people on The Traitor, now that I'm thinking about it?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Yes. Okay. So I like, have heard of this show. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No. You're good. So CT was on Traitors 2, and so was Johnny Bananas, for that matter. And there was one other challenger.
These names.
I was going to say, yeah. These aren't real people. You're making fun of me because I'm in Australia, aren't you?
And then the final era is 2018 to 2023, and there's some good names in that era as well. I'm just really impressed by the casting here. This is like a who's who that has ever played this show, and man, does it make for some fun television. And the show's just a really fun competition show. It's more of a physical competition show, though there are puzzles and those kind of things as well. But there's definitely a lot of physical challenges as well. So, I've really enjoyed watching this show. And, you know, I'm not necessarily recommending starting with season 40. But if you've never watched it before and you want to, you're going to see some interesting people this season. That's for sure. It's just so much more fun when you have all the baggage that goes along with all of them. You know, when it becomes both a reality show competition show, which is what I love, and also a little bit of a soap opera, too, where you kind of know these personalities and how they interact together. So over, again, 40 seasons of television. So it's a really impressive thing that they've done. And I kind of feel a little bit like maybe this is kind of a last hurrah for the challenge. I don't know where they go from here because nobody has MTV anymore. So like they're going to have to like relocate to Paramount Plus or something like that to really continue this on.
So you're saying it's the Eras Tour of Challenges.
It is the Eras Tour of Challenges. That is the perfect way to say it. That is Challenge. It is on MTV. And if you want to stream it, you'll have to use MTV's streaming app. With lots of ads and fun stuff there. And then Dinosaur is on Hulu, and Lady in the Water is available on VOD. Well, let's get to the big dig, guys. Let's review Borderlands.
Would you look at that? A ladder! Unfortunately, my design doesn't facilitate this type of...
Well, destiny awaits.
Legend has it that there's this massive treasure hidden in some secret vault. And if you go hunting for it, you'd better take any help you can get.
A ragtag team of misfits embark on a mission to save a missing girl who holds the key to unimaginable power. Borderlands, of course, is based on a video game that I guess is a real thing that came out at some point as a non-gamer. It exists.
We know that.
Ariana Greenblatt plays Tiny Tina. Cate Blanchett plays Lilith. Jamie Lee Curtis hopping in there as well. You've got Kevin Hart as Roland and Jack Black voicing Claptrap. What did you guys think of Borderlands? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Alice, kick us off.
Look, as someone who had it on her... on her Summer Sum game, I really wanted it to be good. I really did. But it was awful terrible. And I mean, I don't even have enough passion in it, but I guess the more accurate thing would be to say I hated it.
Okay, Alice is in the I hated it. Andrew.
Hated it.
From and Andrew.
I'm actually in the same vein as Alice. I don't have enough invested in the Borderlands franchise to be offended by what I saw, but it's a bad movie. So yeah, I hate it.
Yep.
Well, then I guess I get to be the one who gets to pretend this movie is an Oscar contender because I only didn't like it. So,
oh my God, it's your favorite movie of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the reason I actually, we're probably all about the same. The reason I don't like it is I don't have enough time to hate a movie like this. And honestly, it's not all bad. Like I think there's a very key thing about this movie that makes it bad, and we will get there. In fact, I will talk about that as I'm talking about my general feelings. But there are some things in this movie that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the cast. Oh, this may be like, by the way, I have read nothing on what other people think of this movie, even though it's been out for a little bit. Because I usually try to wait until we have our conversations before I start like reading other people's reviews and stuff. So I'm always a little like tentative when calling out things that I'm worried other people may vehemently disagree with me on. I think Cate Blanchett was a great casting choice.
Oh,
I think that is a smart move that is completely bungled. I think the idea of having a not just another, you know, fresh out of college, you know, go get 'em girl, but to have an actual actor with some gravitas and with some real skill playing that role was actually really smart. Now, I don't think it works, but I don't think it's her fault. And I just kept watching going, I love the concept of her playing this character if the actual backstory and themes of that character are fulfilled. And like,
or present.
Or present. Yes, very much so. So I felt like that was in the positive column for me, even though, again, it doesn't really work, but I still was glad to see it in a very similar way. And all my praises are going to be, you know, feigned praise. But in the same way, I think there's an interesting world in here somewhere, too. Like there was something about the design of the world and the idea of, you know, this vault, you know, could have given it like an Indiana Jones style feel. You know, there could have been a very Fifth Element kind of feel to it going on, and it just kind of never really gets there. But I guess I saw enough promise and enough like things that, that I wasn't, you know, throwing up in my mouth a little bit about that, that I don't think I can say I hate it. I think I just didn't like it because it's really bad, but I don't know that I can really say I hated it. And the reason I think a lot of it doesn't work, and this will be my end of my summary, and then we'll go to one of you guys who, you know, despise the movie. And the reason I think a lot of it doesn't work is, it's a video game, and I don't mean it's a video game movie.
Yep.
I mean, it's a video game and I can't play, and it feels like it has the exact same amount in less actually for some of interest in character development, plot, those kind of things that a video game that just wants to throw in a few cutscenes has. And so everything feels shallow. Everything feels unearned. Nothing feels... The thing I kept coming back to was, how am I supposed to invest in anything here? I have no idea what I'm supposed to care about or what I'm supposed to invest on because nothing is explained. I think I can talk around spoilers and stuff, but there is even, you know, towards the end, there's a monster that shows up at one point, and it's just like something that happens, and it hasn't been talked about, hasn't been for, I'm just like, that's a video game. Monsters show up every once in a while, and you know, you don't know what they are and you have to fight them. It reminded me a lot of World of Warcraft, the movie World of Warcraft, in this way, where I just felt like every few minutes that I was missing something because I hadn't played the game. Now that may not be true, but it felt like that. It felt like, either there is an Easter egg here or some sort of wink and nod here that I'm missing, or this movie just doesn't understand how you know plot progression works or how comedic timing works, which those may be true as well.
I think it's more of that.
Yeah, Andrew, why don't you talk, since you do you have more familiarity with the game?
I can't say I've played enough of the Borderlands games to fully appreciate what a good adaptation would look like, but even I can say this isn't it. Now, I do have friends who have seen this film as well as played all the games, and they said it's insultingly bad. These are the people who, like what Alice and I were talking about, we don't have enough knowledge or passion invested to fully, you know, say this is insultingly bad, but I've heard people who have played all the games say that. Now, from what I understand, none of the characters were cast properly. Like, Kate Blanchett's character is supposed to be like an 18-year-old girl or something like that, and Kevin Hart's character, ironically, is supposed to be a giant hulking, like, Navy SEAL looking guy.
Oh, so, of course. Kevin Hart, of course. That immediately comes to mind when I think of a character description like that.
Exactly, yeah. And apparently Jamie Lee Curtis is also supposed to be a young woman, too. It's just compounding things like this that people said whenever they were watching it. They were insulted, like, beyond, you know, casting performances were really bad. Eli Roth, I'll just say this, does not know how to shoot action scenes. The guy is known for kids movies and horror, like insanely gory horror films, you know? So he's kind of like somebody help George Miller in that way, you know, kids films and then crazy Mad Max stuff.
How dare you bring George Miller's name into your mouth when you're talking about Eli Roth?
I would have loved if this had been shot like Mad Max. Are you kidding?
Oh, I'm not saying that this is on the same level. I'm saying that there's a comparison between two directors who have the same styles of filmmaking in, like, oh, I'll make a family film, and then in the same headspace go, I'll make something insane and crazy for adults. So, yeah, I'm not in any way saying Eli Roth is on the same level as George Miller. Let's get that straight right now, because I do not. The visual effects in this movie are rushed. I think that's the new way I'm going to say I don't like the visual effects in something, because I just saw a great... This isn't a plug for another channel.
This is the James. Oh no, I thought it might be the James Gunn quote. Continue.
Oh no! This was off of a YouTube channel the other day called Corridor, where they do like a visual effects artist react and visual effects artist critique and stuff like that. And they were talking about how the visual effects industry in this day is inundated with so much to do that they're rushing through projects, and that's why projects don't look as good as they could. Because they have unrealistic deadlines. So from now on, I'm not going to say that visual effects look bad. I'm going to say that they look rushed. So in this movie, these visual effects are very rushed. And
These visual effects look super, super, super rushed.
Yep. Yes. 2 weeks is what they were given, clearly.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no character development at all. Those are all the critiques that I heard from friends.
Yeah.
I totally agree with.
I will tell you, the character development one's a big one for me. I don't care about the cast. I switch up the casting for an adaptation. That doesn't bother me at all. I understand if you're a fan of the source material, how that can be annoying because you have an idea in your head of what a character is or looks like or, you know, whatever. But as somebody who had zero context, like, that's not going to impact me in the same way. Alice, what are some of your overall thoughts on Borderlands?
Oh, boy. By the way, the James Gunn quote I was saying is that he has finished filming the new Superman movie, and he's giving a year for the VFX artists so that they can do it properly, and he did that on purpose. So people should do that more. I have never been so bored in a film where so much is happening. I think what you guys were saying before with, you know, the cut scenes, the best way I've been able to describe it is it feels like somebody took a video game, pulled out all the cut scenes, and then just like spliced them together with no rhyme or reason. And like you were saying, Aaron, like all the bits where like the character you know, connections happen and the development where it might be happening while you're like running around the screen or whatever isn't there. So you're just like, why does anybody in this movie care about each other? I don't believe you. That was me the whole time. I was like, I do not believe you. And to that point, I don't have any connection to the Borderlands game. So like I, you know, with the casting and everything, I think it could have worked. I think what is adamantly clear, however, is that they aged up all the characters, specifically Lilith, but then didn't age the story up. So the story is still the story of an 18 to early 20s woman, and instead it's being portrayed by a woman in her 50s. And so that's why it felt so disjointed. Like, I don't care if you age up, as if you do the work so that it made more sense. But she was just like the worst. All of these characters were the worst version of their characters. Like Claptrap and the guy with the mask, who I don't even care to remember his name. They were just clearly saying the lines that, like, it felt like I'm in a fight scene and they're just like, time to kill, you know, like that. Yeah. Was
finish him.
Yeah. And then Claptrap was clearly meant to be like a dirty version of the cutesy little side characters you always see, but I just, like, it felt so hollow. Every single time he made a joke, I was like, that is the stupidest joke you could have possibly made in this moment. And then on top of all of that, I've never rooted for characters to die more, for the heroes. I would have loved if they all just, if they failed. Like, especially, I was really looking forward to Ariana Greenblatt's character because she's been doing really well and she's been coming up and doing some really interesting stuff. And I was like, oh, she could be good. I couldn't. Her character was so annoying and I wanted her not to be saved. And I think that's the issue, is like, this is meant to be like a ragtag group of people. It was meant to be, you know, like the Suicide Squad or Guardians of the Galaxy, where these ragtag people come together and, you know, achieve this thing and get together. But it felt more like Suicide Squad, but worse, because there was just nothing. I wanted to leave, and it was the longest hour and 40 minutes of my life, because it also felt very long. But it's so, I mean, I agree, like the visuals and the color and all of that. Like, I just, the whole time I was like, this could have been so cool. This is a movie where I should just be going, that's cool and that's cool and that's cool. But instead I was just like, oh yeah, now this will happen. Oh look. And now this will happen. Oh look. And then it's like, I knew what the big story turn was like 20 minutes into the film, and it was, yeah, I just, and when I say like that, yeah, there's no passion, because I walked out and I pretty much don't ever care to even think about the film again. I wrote the review on sifpop.com, but from that point I was like, cool. Escape from my mind. I had more fun watching Madam Web than I did this movie, which I think tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. Yeah. I think Madam Web had tenfold things to say than this movie does. Mm-hmm. Like, Madam Web at least had something it was trying to say about motherhood and what it means to be, you know, matriarchal and, you know, to take care of, you know, other women. And like it had something it was trying to say that it failed, you know, very spectacularly at. But everything about this movie is paper thin. Is there anything in this movie that is wider than a piece of paper? Like the villain motivation. Nope. Thin as a piece of paper. Like there's
barely, we don't even know any,
barely a villain. We don't know anything about him. Don't, you know, greed. That's it. Greed. Thin as a piece of paper.
Yeah.
That's it. What is it that everybody wants so much? What is in the vault? Thin as a piece of paper. No idea. Just, it's that special thing that you go chase in a video. It's that special thing that you go chase in a video game because you know you need it. It's, you know, coins in Mario that you have no idea what they mean, or, you know, whatever it might be. Like, it's nothing. Everything is paper thin. Anytime two characters were trying to have some sort of moment or like you could tell the movie wanted it to mean something, I just kept thinking, how is it supposed to mean? Like, I think the movie told me that Roland, the Kevin Hart character, and the Commander Knox character were like
a thing
at some point, right? And we're supposed to feel something when something happens to one of them.
I was just like, okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, like in you know, that character has the prototypical, like, maybe good character on the bad side. Mm. That, you know, is, are they going to turn to the good side? But barely. Again, paper thin. Like, nothing. I don't know how you're supposed to attach yourself to anything in this movie. Am I missing something? Is there something in this movie that's wider than a piece of paper? That's the question. Is there?
No, absolutely not. I think okay. that it's what is also insane to me is that this movie had reshoots. I would love to know what were the scenes that got reshot. And because I can tell you right now, there is no difference in quality throughout that entire thing. I remember at the very beginning when you meet Kate Blanchett in the bar, I'm like, okay, yeah, okay. And then it just all gone and went downhill from there. I was just like, okay, mm-hmm. hour and 20 minutes to go.
See, I think that Kate Blanchett is giving a good performance in a bad movie, even yes. if she is miscast.
Yeah.
She's my only positive.
I think she's Kate Blanchett. Like, I don't think she can give a bad performance.
But you're
that
right.
That might be it.
There's something. There is, again, this is why I can't quite be in the hate it. Because there's a spark of something in that scene that you mentioned, in that bar scene, mm-hmm. where Kate Blanchett is doing something different than I've ever seen her do before, and she's doing it well. You know, she is doing the Han Solo type, roguish, yep. go by my own rules, do my own thing.
She definitely shuts first.
Yes. I kind of want to see Lilith, that character, played by Kate Blanchett in an entirely different movie where that character is honored.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I just think there's something there.
I think the issue is this movie has too much movie in it to be a good movie. Like, if you actually think about the story, in an hour and 40 minutes, they have to introduce all five or six or whatever of these characters, then get them to bond and go through whatever it is they need to do to bond. Then you have these MacGuffins that they have to find that will ultimately result in them opening this other thing. And all of that, and then there's obviously whatever happens at the end in terms of, like, pretty big story developments. So there's a lot of context and a lot of information and character development that needs to happen that would have been needed in a, like, good, I'd say, like, at least, if you're going to put it all in one movie, make it like a 2.5 hour movie. But it's just, they're just going from like, okay, now they've met, and now they've met, and now they're a group, and now they got to go meet the scientist character, and then now they're going to go for MacGuffin number two. Like, it was just literally like, and the next step, and the next step, and the next step.
MacGuffin number cohesion. Two was the most insulting thing ever.
Oh, it's the worst. It really is the worst.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. Yeah. Yeah. How'd you do it? I just did. What?
I've said this before in relation to kind of how Marvel broke the code with, you know, doing team up movies. And it's just too risky, mm-hmm. I think, for movie studios to have a property and do this, or they think it is. But imagine a world where we get a Lilith movie, an Indiana Jones style, you know, Lilith the Rogue doing her thing, tangentially attached to that character from the games, and we learn some things about her, we get to know her, we get to root for her. Then we do a Rogue and Tiny, Roland and Tiny Tina movie. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like there is something about giving space to the characters so that when you finally do a team up, we know who they are. We know their traits, the depth of them as human beings, or non-human beings, as the case may be. And I just think you either have to have the faith to do a cinematic universe, mm-hmm. or you do a TV show if you're going to try to do something like this. There's no other way to do it.
I was just thinking that this would have worked really well. Like, imagine if they'd done one of those shows where it's like, here's the thing from a different perspective sort of thing. So you have, like, you know, 8 episodes, and each episode follows a different character where it will end with them meeting up with the other ones in, like, a standoff or something. And then there's, like, 2 episodes that just get them to being like, oh, we need to team up and find this thing. And that's where season 1 ends, right? And then you go to season 2. Like, I just think even if they'd done that as the movie, like, even if they wanted to make a movie and they didn't want to make a movie per character, the movie should have just been them, like, meeting for the first time. Like, meeting and get, and then at the end they would have been like, we have to go find this thing to keep it away from Atlas. And it'd be like, okay, let's go. End of film. And then the rest of the time could have been spent on character development.
Yeah, I think audiences just aren't in tune with quick character development anymore. Now, there's some movies that do it well. Mm-hmm. I think if you can, you know, really write the snot out of your characters and make those relational moments work, but you can usually only do that for 1 or 2. And that's why some of the best older movies that work in 90 minutes to 2 hours, the side characters are completely underdeveloped. They're all paper thin, but you've got, like, the main character and maybe one other character that are really developed. And so, you know, where to invest, you know, your energy or your ideas. And I just think, since, again, Marvel and Game of Thrones too, like, there's just this type of storytelling where we are used to a world where, with TV or cinematic universes, where we get the depth on everybody.
Yeah.
And that's just not going to happen in 90 minutes to 2 hours. It's just not going to happen. Not that this movie even attempted it, to be honest, because there's not a lot going on.
It's like when you are, like, really, really hungry for, like, fast food, and then you get the fast food, but the restaurant was having, like, a really bad night. And then you open the burger and you go to take your first bite, and it's, like, the coldest, like, the lettuce is wilted and then it's all greasy, and you take a couple bites and it immediately becomes a lump in your stomach. And then the chips are all soggy, and it's just a bad time overall.
Chips is Australian for fries, in case anybody wondered why Alice was having chips with her burger. Although you can have chips with your burger.
You can have chips with your burger.
crisps, as they might say in England. Mm. Wait, can I ask you this before we move on? Do you call, what do you call?
We call it all chips.
Okay, no. We're going with the buns.
Yeah.
Right? And then in between the buns is a piece of chicken. What is that?
What do you mean? It's
like a grilled chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like a patty, like a chicken patty. Why?
What do you call it?
What do you call it? Chicken what?
Like a fillet?
You wouldn't say chicken.
With the, you take a bite, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a cheeseburger. It's not a hamburger.
Oh, but it's chicken burger.
It's a chicken burger. That's what I thought. No, it's a chicken sandwich.
It's not a sandwich. It's a burger. It's the same makeup as
I've had this conversation. I'm just telling you, when you come to the United States, you might want to call it a chicken sandwich.
It's a sandwich if you use, like, normal loaf sliced bread. Sliced bread equals sandwich. Uh-huh. Bun bread equals burger.
Yeah, no. Burger is always beef.
That's incorrect. What does a vegetarian do then?
Well, a veggie burger is something else because it's imitating a beef burger.
You immediately made it make no sense at all.
A piece of grilled chicken is not imitating ground beef. But making a vegetarian form of ground beef is imitating ground beef.
How do you know it's not imitating ground beef? What if it's made out of ground chicken? It's still ground format.
I'll give you that. If you grind up the chicken and grill it as, like, ground chicken, I will almost give you the chicken burger. But no, it is a chicken sandwich.
This conversation is more entertaining than Borderlands was.
That is the point. All right. Anybody have one last thing to say about Borderlands? Andrew?
Oh, no, let's get out of this, please.
Okay, Alice?
I don't even care to play the games because of how bored I was throughout the movie. This was a Borderlands movie. Boring movie.
I think what you're reaching for is more like Borderlands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
From the games that I have played, they were fun. I just don't know enough about the lore and everything. I just played like a couple hours.
My one final thing is Claptrap. How dare you? You will never be fit to sniff the rust of Wall-E. So just stop trying. Stop trying to be what you aren't.
You want to know something funny? Is Claptrap is one of the most beloved video game characters ever.
Yeah.
Like, he's like in the top 20 most beloved characters, and this is how they do him justice, apparently.
That is Borderlands. It is still in some theaters if you want to go see it. I have a feeling it'll be on VOD very, very soon. This movie made like $20 million on a budget of, what, 150, something like that?
Yep.
Ugh.
They went to Comic-Con and everything.
Ugh. How dare they?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything. From brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's move on to the best ever challenge. We're going to do video game adaptations, and we're going to do both movies and TV. So we are going to do this again, round robin nomination style. So we will each nominate three, and then we will pick the one that will be the best video game adaptation ever. Andrew, kick us off. What is the first nomination?
What I consider to be the best video game adaptation is the newly released Fallout.
This is a great choice. Great choice. Definitely would have been one of my nominations had somebody else not picked it. And a great example of why this can work as a TV show. Fallout does everything right that Borderlands does wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Alice, what is your first nomination?
My first nomination is the best video game adaptation, in my opinion, of all time, which is The Last of Us.
It was my number two.
Yeah, I'll let you guys enjoy that.
It's amazing.
It's not.
You telling me that you weren't broken down into a pool of tears whenever the Frank and is it Frank and Dale episode?
Yeah. One of the best episodes of TV ever.
Yeah.
I wish the rest of the show had lived up to that episode. That episode was amazing. I'm making it sound like I hated that show. I didn't hate that show. I really, really disliked
the final episode. You heard it here first, guys. Aaron loves Borderlands and hates The Last of Us.
That's right.
You heard it here. Aaron, what is your first nomination?
My first nomination is going to be... I don't know how strategic I want to be here.
I would love to know the strategy behind the best ever challenge.
I'm going to go with...
I know.
I don't know which one it was. You know what? I'm going to go with Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, okay. That was my next one.
I will nominate Sonic the Hedgehog. I think that first one specifically is really, really good. So there you go. That's my first nomination. Andrew, what's your second nomination?
Sticking with TV shows, I think that you're correct. Whenever you're adapting a video game, it does you better service to do either a cinematic universe or a television show, mm-hmm. the more I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Having said all that, my second nomination is going to be Arcane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen enough of Arcane to make that call. I've seen the first couple episodes, and I did think it was really beautiful, but I wasn't compelled to stick around.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. It took me a couple episodes to really get invested, but once it hooked me, it kept me for the rest of the show. So yep. I highly recommend. I think the voice performances are astounding.
Okay. Alice, what's your next?
Yep. I should put it out there. I haven't seen Arcane, and I have yet to see Fallout. It's on my list. I will get to it. So that's too
big. All right.
My next nomination is also another TV show, and one where I went in being like, all right, I'll give it a go. And I really want a season two now. And it is Twisted Metal.
I wonder if this would get brought up. I haven't seen any of it.
Oh, I haven't either, but I played all the games.
It's very good, very enjoyable. I wanted, even though I was like, it's unlikely that maybe one or both apparently haven't seen, I do recommend. It is like just a really fun, it's, you know what it is? It's what Borderlands should have been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyable.
I guess I'm the only one going to pick movies. You guys are leaving all the movies to me.
Yeah.
I'm going with Gran Turismo. I think Gran Turismo is really good.
I'm surprised.
So I want to get that on there. Andrew, your final nominee.
Both Sonic and Gran Turismo were the only, or two of three honorable mentions that I had.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going to finish out my list with a Netflix show I haven't even finished yet, but it is really good enough for me to put it on my list, and that is Cyberpunk Edgerunners. Cyberpunk came out last year or 2 years ago. Absolutely gorgeous game if you got it to work. And I thought the story was fascinating, and the show that they came out with just added that much more to the depth of the lore of the show or the game, and I really appreciate it so far.
All right. Alice, what is your final nomination?
Okay, so my original one was Sonic, but now, oh goodness, they're both so close. They're both movies. Which one? Do I go with the darker one or the lighter one? Do I go with the one for all families or the one where families definitely should never see it? I'm going to go, because I love Shogun so much, I'm going to go with the new Mortal Kombat, because I really enjoyed it. I think it's so much fun, and everybody should watch it. And it's getting a sequel that's currently filming. So
nice.
Yes.
I'm going to go for my final nomination then for 2018's Tomb Raider, starring Alicia Vikander.
Good movie.
I think that's a really good movie. I was actually disappointed that they didn't keep making those.
Yeah.
There you go. Those are the nine nominees. Do you feel like we missed anything? Like anything you guys had an honorable mention that had, you know, didn't get a shout out that you at least, you know, want to give a shout out?
95 Mortal Kombat. I know nobody loves that movie, but the soundtrack is so good. It's such a good soundtrack. And the action for back in the day, because back in the day, the action in video game movies was terrible. I'm thinking of the Super Mario Brothers and Street Fighter. I think that the combat in the original Mortal Kombat was really good. But I'm slowly starting to agree with Alice that this new remake is better than the 95 one. I'm slowly coming
Kano's
around.
Kano's just awesome.
He's so Kano. Good.
He's so
and Sub-Zero
good.
Is still terrifying.
And it's all shot and produced in Australia. So, we love that. The two in my honorable, the one that I was struggling with was Detective Pikachu.
Yes,
I really love that movie. It's so enjoyable.
Not gonna lie, I forgot about it.
Yeah, it is technically a video game movie. People forgot it's a video game. And then Unfortunately, it has been cancelled, but I really like the Halo TV show. As someone who's never played Halo in their entire life, I love Pablo Schreiber, and I thought it was an interesting... And it just got really good, and then they cancelled it.
It happens.
So
Swamp Thing, what?
But on the flip side, one Act of the
light,
actors...
what?
Oh, don't even. Don't talk to me about it. Don't, like, I'm still in my period of mourning, so we cannot acknowledge that.
Okay.
But on the plus side, one of the actors from it, she has just been cast as the new lead in Bridgerton. So we'll be seeing more of her. And she's also Aussie. So what? We are doing well.
Can't figure out what to call a chicken sandwich, but we know how to do
it. It's called a burger. We can figure it out. It's a burger.
We probably should mention the most recent Super Mario Brothers movie. That did really well.
Yeah, that's getting a bajillion sequels.
Yeah, that's going to happen. I'm going to proactively mention the Zelda movie, just because certainly it's going to be amazing. And we should probably also mention Resident Evil. Like, the fact that franchise got like six movies is, you know, probably worth mentioning.
But they weren't good movies.
Extinction was okay. Resident Evil Extinction is a decent film.
I've only seen, like, the first one.
And the first one's not that bad either. But not that bad is probably not where you want to start.
Well, also, if we're mentioning ones that haven't come out yet, but that we have high hopes for, might I put out there Amazon's new Like a Dragon, the Yakuza game. So there's a show coming out about the Yakuza game that just came out recently called Like a Dragon, and my partner played both of those that have just recently come out, and I saw so many clips and it looked great, and so I'm very excited for it. And it's foreign language, it's like in Japanese and produced in Japan and everything, so I'm very excited for that.
And somebody right now is yelling Five Nights at Freddy's at us.
We
just disagree vehemently with you, so
even though that is also getting a sequel.
Of course it is. People love that movie.
It made a lot of money.
It made a bunch of money. What did the writers over at SifPop.com have to say, Mr. Ormsby?
Well, they agreed with me. So good job, gurus.
So they are correct.
So they are correct.
Angry Birds Movie 2 was the best video game.
Exactly.
Movie of all time.
Coming in at number 3, we have Fallout. Coming in at number 2, we have The Last of Us. And at number 1, we have Arcane. Mm-hmm. I mean, Arcane ran away with it.
Yeah.
Like, people do adore that show, especially if you work in animation.
To watch the show.
I did think about like including movies like about video games, but that was it was video game adapt. Like, I was thinking like King of Kong, you know, that kind of thing. But that's not a video game adaptation. That may be a video game movie if you stretch the, you know, idea of it. But like Tetris, like the movie Tetris. Well, it's not an adaptation of the game Tetris. It's a story about how, you know.
Yeah, and it's funny because whenever you look up video game adaptations, a movie that always comes up is Scott Pilgrim, and I'm like, that's not. It's like got video game things in it.
What a weird thing to say. Yeah,
I think it's because it's got video game like themes, but it is not. I mean, it is also a video game, but it definitely came after the movie.
Yeah. All right, so it is decided. We all agree that Gran Turismo is the best video game adaptation ever made.
I dislike that film. That's not a good film, in my opinion.
Guys, I will submit. We can go with The Last of Us. I know all three have seen it, and you two absolutely love it, and I like
it. The trailer came out, and it looks so good for season 2. I'm sorry.
I just have nobody to root for in that show, and it makes me very, very sad. Because they're all a bunch of jerk faces, and they all like to kill people.
They're trying to survive.
If you lived in the zombie apocalypse, you would also become a jerk face. Or die.
That's the moral of the story.
We'll see.
I'm happy to eat my words and your brain. If in fact,
that's right. That's right. Okay, there you go. That's the best ever challenge of The Last of Us, the official best video game adaptation ever. All right, let's move on to the final artifact. But before we do, Alice, you are free to go because I knew you didn't watch it. You're welcome to stay if you want to stick around, but it's up to you.
Oh, that's okay. I'm going to go have breakfast. I will listen to this because I am actually interested in seeing this film. So I'm going to go do that and then I will listen to it afterwards when it's live.
Where do you want people to find you online, Alice?
Well, as I mentioned, I am a writer for SifPop.com, and I did write a review for Borderlands, and it was, if you listen to this just now, well, you can surmise what the review's like, but hopefully in a more professional, well-toned way. And then from there on, you can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Ali G Mick, M-I-C-H. And then as I will be continuing to tout this, but I'm currently working on getting my own feature film that might one day be reviewed. What? And it is called Omerta. You can find it on socials at Omerta Film, but instead of an E, it's a 3, so O-M-3-R-T-A Film. And recent news on that front is that we have been shortlisted for an actor award for best short film, which is the Australian Academy of Cinema and Television.
Nice.
And so hopefully we get good news on that. And if not, I won't mention anything the next time I'm on. but that's still exciting. And yeah, if you want to see what's happening there, you can find us on those socials.
All right. That is Omerta, if you want to check that out. All right. Peace out, Alice. Thanks for joining us.
Peace out.
On the next one.
Catch you on the flip side.
All right, Andrew, let's talk about The Killer.
Let's do it.
This is what it takes. My process is purely logistical. If I'm effective, it's because of one simple fact. I don't give a
Z is a feared contract killer known as the Queen of the Dead, but when she refuses to murder a young blind woman, she finds herself hunted both by criminal colleagues and a determined police detective. This is John Woo remaking one of his classic movies, the 1989 Chow Yun-fat movie, The Killer. It also comes after Fincher made a movie called The Killer, so we're all getting very confused at this point. It is available on Peacock, and what did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Believe it or not, I really liked it.
Really liked it. I'm going with just okay is where okay. I land. So why don't you give us your thoughts on The Killer? What did you think?
First off, I have not seen the original. I want to get that out there. It is very difficult to find copies of John Woo movies here in America, especially his stuff that he did in the 80s and 90s. But I will say, just from watching this, John Woo, unlike Eli Roth, does know how to shoot action sequences. Not only are they exciting to watch, but they are easy to follow. He can make shooting an action scene look so effortless. I think that there's a sequence where a woman is singing in a nightclub, and it really made me appreciate the cinematography of this film, the way the camera moved gracefully around the smoky, dim-lit room. It really captured the mood and the ambiance of it. It was actually really impressive to me. So from the few John Woo movies I've seen, including Mission Impossible 2, which was kind of a letdown, I have really enjoyed the few movies of his that I have seen. And I've always been impressed by the action sequences, but now I'm impressed by the cinematography as well.
Yeah, Woo is an interesting one for me. I come away from most of his movies feeling exactly the same. Like, I appreciate the artistic attempt. It just doesn't connect with me. And I think some of that has to do with probably the subject matter. He's obviously very fascinated by the beauty of shooting guns and gunplay and bullets and bullet wounds and, you know, crossfire and all sorts. Like, he loves the idea of the, you know, the double gun cross. you know, where you're making the Jesus crucifixion with guns in both hands and spinning around and shooting. Like, he loves that kind of stuff. And I just, you know, I don't know. I don't think guns are cool. And he thinks guns are cool, is probably the simplest way to say it and most derivative way to say that. But I always feel like I have beautiful things that I'm looking at, and that he understands character work and plot at least enough for me to stay invested in these characters. I think both Omar Sy and Nathalie Emmanuel are both compelling characters, and the idea that they're kind of the same person in two different roles is the same as the original The Killer, which I haven't seen in forever. I think at college somebody had a copy and we watched it, but I don't remember a ton about it. But I do remember it having this kind of dynamic where it was like, oh, we've got two, you know, two of the coolest people, but they just happen to be in, you know, opposite sides. And, you know, it's not a new concept necessarily. But it's, you know, it's always an interesting one to see. So, yeah, there's stuff there that I enjoy. There's always something I can hold on to. But then there's just the John Woo stuff that just gets a little tiresome for me. And sometimes even the cinematography and the beautiful shots that he's doing sometimes feel a little over the top. And like, yeah, I get it. The guy fell down and looks like the crucifix that's above him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just feels a little in your face. Sometimes the things that he's doing, but that may be a preconceived thing that I bring into it with, you know, kind of feeling, you know, his artistic desires. So yeah.
I think that the staples of an amazing John Woo action movie, you know, the slow-mo, the doves, the dual-wielding mm-hmm. pistols, bad guys in matching trench coats, it's mm-hmm. all here. You know, it's all here on display, and it's something that is in almost every single John Woo movie I've seen. I don't have a problem with going back to classics, you know, making a name for yourself with having staples in the industry. Michael Bay's made a very lucrative career out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that he does something with his movies where if you don't allow yourself to be fully immersed in the worlds that he creates, it can come across as cheesy or over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I do find the ending of this movie to be a little bit different tonally, and it did come across as even more over the top and cheesy than the rest of the film.
Maybe a little pretentious too, you know, just kind of like, look at the thing I'm doing, kind of.
A little bit. I could see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I just, kind of like last week, whenever you were saying we were doing the review for the movie Trap, and you said sometimes you find a movie where you have parts of your brain that are saying to you, this makes no sense, this makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, well, I just tell those parts of my brain sometimes, just go away. I'm having fun with what I'm watching.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was me in this instance watching The Killer. So, Again, I'm not coming in with any preconceived notion of the first movie. I haven't seen it, so I don't know. I can't compare how good this one is to the original one. With most of the time, the original is always better. So this does have me interested to see the original. I'll say that.
Yeah. There were a couple other things that annoyed me story-wise. One was that the Z character, I never feel like we really understand the decision that she is making to save this woman. If she has been a contract, you know, killer up until this point, like, that's a big transition to make, and I don't think we're given enough of the why. Like, why all of a sudden is she caring about, you know, mm-hmm. these targets? And I think they wink at it a little bit. Like, I think there's like, oh, you remind me of my sister. Like, and I think we're supposed to like think that that's something to do, but it feels a little unearned, that kind of character movement that's going on. And it feels unearned as far as like the character that she's saving. Like, we don't, you know, we hear a little bit of her story, but we, like, there's not a lot of understanding of, you know, why this person. And that was true for the Sam Worthington character as well. Like, it just, it felt like everything was a little bit unearned as far as the character movements went for me.
I would 100% agree, and my response is, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. And that's probably and that's probably a big part of it is, like, I think there is just an entertainment aspect to this, and that's what I said. Like, the entertainment part of this didn't connect with me. I didn't find it entertaining, like many people will, and so take that at face value,
yeah.
You know, for what that means. Anything else about the killer that you wanted to talk about?
There is a stunt with a car that flips over at the beginning of this movie.
Yeah.
That literally lands on top of a stuntman. Uh-huh. Do you see that?
I think that's CG.
Really?
I'm probably wrong. Somebody's going to correct me. Please do. I actually rewound it because I was like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
And I think there's a combination of practical and CG there that allows for the pre-flipping stuff to be CG and then some sort of final movement stuff to be practical. But I could be wrong on that.
It's done very well.
It's done very well. Yes.
Unless it's real and it was an accident, which is also a possibility
that
was just a stunt that went terribly wrong. And they decided, well, I guess that's the footage we're losing or using because we almost lost our stuntman.
Yeah. Yeah. That was wild. That was wild.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the stunts, I didn't really notice any, like, besides, like, blood splatter and stuff like that, the CGI didn't stand out to me. Everything looked
sure.
Fairly believable and real.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. That is The Killer. It is on Peacock. John Woo, you know, he's one of our aging directors, still giving it a go. They're all out there doing their thing. You know, Eastwood's in his 90s now, or is he? I don't know. He's so...
He's 96, I think.
Oh, come on. He's not that old, is he?
Anyways, Eastwood?
Yeah, it's wild to watch. Who's in? Yeah, they're just everybody's out there making their movies. And, you know, best to them. It's one of those things you can keep doing.
Yep. So he was born in 1930.
Mm. 2024. That is 96.
He's 94. Sorry, I was off by 2 years. But yes, he is in his 90s.
The Killer is a John Woo movie on Peacock, but not that John Woo movie called The Killer. It's the new John Woo movie called The Killer, available on Peacock. Well, we did it, man. We did a podcast.
Yeah,
congratulations to us for finishing one up. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
In a more than usual giant thank you to producer Phil.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hopefully you have no idea why, but there was a lot of editing involved in this week's episode. So thank you, Phil, for producing the audio and video show. Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Appreciate you. If you want to check that out, you can go to patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment or rating or a review, whether that's at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can also email us at feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than getting someone to admit that they're the one who wrote Borderlands. We'll be back next week with more movies, and we will see you then.
Bye!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.